Today is also the day that we celebrate the Reformation. It's been 499 years since Martin Luther nailed those theses on the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg, Germany, wanting to start a conversation that would change the church that he was a part of for the good. And we've come a long way in 499 years so far, in fact, that tomorrow in Lund, Sweden, there will be a gathering for worship between Lutherans and Roman Catholics attended by Pope Francis himself and the Lutheran World Federation President Bishop Yunin as they take more steps toward unity in Christ's church in the world. It is a landmark day for the Church of Jesus Christ, and I hope that you will be lifting our world religious leaders in your prayers. It is actually the first of several events that will enable our church together to celebrate 500 years of Reformation in the church, because we'll be celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation next October 31st. And if that's a moment you don't want to miss, when the Pope joins with the Lutheran World Bishop, you could go to Luther Seminary tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning and add your prayers to theirs for unity of the church. And then at 8:30, there's going to be a live webcast of that service from Sweden in the Northwestern Hall Auditorium. But for now, we're going to turn our attention to a reformer who was on the scene a few thousand years before Martin Luther lived and breathed, because God didn't just start calling up reformers recently. He's been doing it since the time that he asked Noah to build a boat, because the world has just never been quite as perfect as God intended for it to be. The prophet Elijah lived about 2,500 years before Martin Luther, and to catch you up from where we were last week, 100 years after King David. After King David and his son Solomon ruled over the Israelites, division in the kingdom led to the splitting of the kingdom into two, the northern and the southern kingdoms, Israel and Judah. And the book of Kings will tell you the stories about the series of kings who led from there on. They were kings who didn't honor God in the way that David and Solomon did, or at least intended to do. And Ahab, whose name you heard in our reading today, Ahab was the worst of all of the bad kings, doing more to provoke God's anger than perhaps all of the other bad kings combined. If you feel like there's heat in our politics today, it compares not at all with what was going on during Ahab's reign. Ahab and his wife Jezebel ruled by worshiping the idol Baal, thinking that Baal was the one to whom they should pledge their allegiance and burn their sacrificial offerings in order to get rain for their crops, fertility for their people. But they were wrong. There was only one true God. There is only one true God. And God sent Elijah the prophet to let Ahab know in no uncertain terms that if there were to be rain, it would be only by his God's say-so. And then, as if to make God's point perfectly clear, things dried out, and dried out fast. But just like today, when things go south for a nation, they typically go south for the least and the lowest in the nation first. It's prophets and widows and the like who suffer the most when the economy turns bad. Corrupt leaders are blind to the needs of their people, but God isn't. And you see that in Elijah's story as it unfolds. Elijah had absolutely no source of sustenance, but God directed him to go to a wadi, just a temporary little pond, a place where there was enough to sustain him. And then God commanded a raven to feed him. And lo and behold, the raven obeyed, and Elijah was fed. As the story goes on, you see that it didn't work quite as smoothly with the widow. She's got a little argumentativeness in her, but the same principle was at work. God commanded her, and so when Elijah asked, she fed, and miraculously, there was enough for the widow's family and for their guest, Elijah the prophet from Tishbite, or from Tishbe. It's like folks who are at the end of their rope, going to the food shelf at the end of the month. There always seems to be enough for them because someone else has answered God's call, kind of like the raven did, kind of like the widow did, and suddenly there is enough. There is always food on the shelf. When our confirmation class was studying this passage at Camp Wapagasset a few weeks ago, Mila and Scott and Parker had some amazing insights about, or from this story, about how we need to learn about trusting God when we get to the end of our ropes, because all of us come to the end of our ropes at some time in life. But look at Elijah. He didn't even need to ask. Maybe he didn't even know how desperate he was. And God was already working to provide for him whatever he needed. And the confirmands learned that we need to listen for God's calling and direction in our lives daily, because that's how God works, with daily communication to his people to care for one another. God works in crazy ways like that. God can use a widow to make a difference. God can use a bird in the desert to make a difference. Well, then God can probably use a 14-year-old high school student to make a difference. I hope that you can't smell it, but just this past week when we had Redeemer Night really out, the confirmation class went to, they went to Second Harvest Heartland, where we packaged food for an evening. And what our task was to package onions. Lots and lots of onions. We were there for 2 hours, and in 2 hours, we helped to package 3,000 pounds of onions. Well, that may be only a small contribution to the local food shelves, but when 14-year-olds work to distribute good, healthy food, then lots of people get to eat good, healthy food. Around the Twin Cities, people are eating because of those simple responses to the call to serve others. Ravens, widows, 14-year-olds. I'm guessing that God has work for all of us to do. But part of the journey of faith is learning to listen and then trying to respond to God's call. In her faith statement, Mila Keller talked about that and how the service opportunities that she's had through Redeemer have made a difference in her relationship with God. This is what she said. Before coming to Redeemer Lutheran Church, I felt that my faith stayed at church and never ventured outside of it. After I joined Redeemer, I was introduced to service projects outside of church, and that's really helped me become more involved. When I started my confirmation journey, I planted a seed, and I had to put time and effort in for my faith to grow and prosper. The closer I become to God, she said, the more I feel called to serve him. When I serve God, I get to connect with him, and I also get to show that my love for him is never ending. When I serve the Lord, it makes me feel like I'm part of a bigger plan, and it also makes me think about how I can make a great impact in my community and also be able to spread the word of the Lord. Now, doesn't that sound a bit like a reformer to you? Parker Blossom talked about how she experienced a season where she and her family felt distant from God when they'd stopped going to church altogether because life had gotten so complicated they just couldn't find time to worship together as a family. But she saw how God sustained her even in that dry season. During that time, Parker said, I was still learning about and growing in my faith. I did this by praying, talking to others, reading Bible verses, even Bible verses that were on her grandmother's refrigerator. Grandma's, God works in mysterious ways, and a lot of times it's through you. And then she goes on to say, and she went on the websites of different churches looking at what they were learning so she could learn from them. That internet research was nurturing Parker's faith. And eventually, Parker and her family found their way back to church because God never lets the stream run dry. When they connected back to church, she said, I was able to learn things I'd never even thought of before about my faith and the community I'm part of, about the Bible, about God. For Parker, growing in faith was huge. She went on to say, faith has helped me in many parts of my life, and it shows itself in lots of different ways. For example, when I'm stressed, worried, or afraid, and friends, high school students feel a lot of stress, a lot of worry, a lot of fear. So this is important stuff she's learning. When I am stressed, worried, or afraid, faith always gives me a sense of security. It makes me feel like I always have a place to turn, whether it's to God or the people in this community. Parker's classmate, Scott Swanson, talked about how we grow in different ways at different stages of faith. My faith journey began, he said, when I was 2 months old and was baptized at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Stillwater. When I was 3, I started Sunday school there, and I learned about God through stories and songs. We even learned a song that taught us about the books of the Bible. As I got older, I learned what the Old and New Testaments were actually about. I really remember how the story about Jonah getting swallowed by the whale taught me to listen to people and to God. Jonah's another prophet. Prophets know you gotta listen before you speak. I also remember, he says, that it was cool that Jesus turned water into wine and that his first miracle was at a wedding. Well, Scott, I want you to know that Pastor Stephanie thinks that that's a really cool story, too, because that's the gospel reading she chose for her ordination worship service yesterday. We like it that our God likes to party. Scott acknowledges that belief isn't instantaneous. It happens over time. He talked about how his confirmation learning, along with lots of other opportunities, really led him to the understanding he has and the beliefs that he has now. He said, now I'm 14, and I'm happy to be part of a church because it makes me feel connected to God. I am thankful that I was baptized and that I went to Sunday school and confirmation. Remember that, parents. There is gratitude at the end of the story. I plan to continue my faith after getting confirmed by continuing to attend church services and helping with service projects such as Feed My Starving Children and maybe helping out in Sunday school when I'm able. I hope that we'll have a strong youth group. And already, you do. Look at the strength in the three of you, and there are lots more waiting to receive you into that high school group. All three of our confirmands expressed a deep heartfelt gratitude for all of the opportunities that they've had in this place and for the love and encouragement and nurture that they've received here. It's as if this is the wadi where God directed them and directed their families to find the life-giving water of faith, where each of us is fed and where each of us feeds others with the food that we ourselves have received from God. This is how Reformation happens. We listen to God, we respond to God, we grow in our trust of God and trust in relationships with one another, and we become the reformers that change the world. Thanks be to God.